Welcome back to the Conspiracy Hour. I thought we would spend this hour, the day after the 11th anniversary of the 9/11 incident, to examine all of the possibilities. After all, if we're going to do a reasonable job in searching for the truth, we have to entertain every idea, don't we?
And so it seemed to me that any intelligent person thinking about this would say, well, as we line up our hypotheses in a little row to later be checked out through research, one of the hypotheses for why and how these buildings came down would have to be that they were brought down by explosives, and that this was a planned thing. In other words, some kind of controlled demolition. Now, I'm not arguing at this point that it should be obvious to all of us that it was controlled demolition. I'm making a much more modest, completely rational claim that as we investigate such collapses, one of the hypotheses we would look at would be planted explosives. It'd be very peculiar to exclude that and push that from the table. Well, how distressing then when I discovered that the 9/11 Commission's report, which came out in 2004, didn't even entertain the idea. It's not in there. It's not mentioned. They didn't look into it. They essentially started there, as far as I can tell, the Commission accepted the FBI's finding that there were 19 Arab hijackers, that they had rammed their planes in the buildings, and the buildings came down because of plane impact, burning jet fuel, and that's it, folks.
Now you get the idea. The 9/11 Commission did not even investigate the idea that perhaps it was a controlled demolition, or maybe it happened some other way than the official story. Now do you wonder why the 9/11 Commission report came out the way it
then
did?
Then the NIST report comes out in 2005. This is the National Institute for Standards and Technology in the United States. And again, they don't seriously consider controlled demolition. It's not even mentioned in the first draft of the final report. Because of complaints from people, they then throw in a couple of token sentences in the final version saying, we found no evidence of controlled demolition. Well, folks, if you don't look, you don't find. And there's no indication that they seriously looked at this hypothesis. Once again, this group of scientists seemed to have accepted at the outset that they knew who did it and they knew how they did it, that their job was simply to fill in the blanks. Their explanation is extremely unconvincing. There's nothing kooky or far out or exotic or irrational about wanting to include a controlled demolition hypothesis in our group of hypotheses as we begin trying to figure out why these buildings disintegrated.
Author David Ray Griffin, in his book The New Pearl Harbor Revisited, he presents a powerful exposé of the false narrative that has been driving the story, undeniable evidence of falsity. In his books, he reveals dozens of omissions, distortions, and contradictions that has been driving the mainstream political agenda since 9/11. Dr. Griffin has done some amazing work, really detailed work. Even probably if you were on the 9/11 Commission and you decided to read his books and what he's laid out, you'd be amazed. There would be information in these books that you probably did not even know about if you were one of the investigators in the 9/11 Commission investigation. Dr. Griffin, how are you?
I'm great, and I'm glad to be with you, Jerry.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure on our end as well. I want to ask you, follow up this Building 7 you were talking about, and my statement that it drives you crazy if you know about the facts, and then you hear these recognized reporters reporting something totally different. For instance, Greg Palast, who's a great investigative reporter, evidently was not aware that Building 7 did not fall on its own.
Yeah, I saw that interview, if you mean, with Lenny Charles on.
Yes.
And it was really just beyond belief. But I really thought Greg Palast was within another category, and it turned out he isn't. It's such a common thing that when people get in this area, they cross over a kind of enchanted boundary where it's impossible to think rationally and empirically, or else at least to do so in public.
Well, frankly, and Dr. Griffith, it's not only the reporters, just regular people. Many people I talk to who are very inquisitive in other things and willing to believe some conspiracy ideas just won't buy 9/11.
I mean, we can understand why corporations who are making billions of dollars off of the so-called, I mean, hundreds of billions of dollars off of the so-called war on terror can't think rationally about it in public anyway. But as to why ordinary citizens who don't have anything to gain from believing the official story, at least monetarily, why they don't want to deal with it, and I think there are a number of factors, and one is what I have called, when I was dealing with philosophy of religion and philosophy of science questions, what we call wishful thinking. We all know about that, but there's an equal phenomenon called fearful thinking, where we will not believe something that we don't want to believe, that would be very threatening to us.
Yeah, I guess I can understand. I mean, we all do the Pledge of Allegiance. We're all proud of our country. We like to think America does good. And to think that its leaders would turn on us as a people is just pretty incomprehensible.
For many people, it would be extremely threatening to believe that we are now living in a country in which the leaders kill its own citizens with impunity, lie about it, use that as a pretext for going to war to kill hundreds of thousands of other people. For many people,
I find that you're right about that, and I just have really a tough time accepting that, because I've always figured that everybody with authority would abuse it. That was one reason I got into journalism to begin with. This is just human nature to take advantage of situations. But most people seem to accept people at face value. You know, they say, I'm doing good. Okay, you're doing good. You're in charge of this investigation. You must know what you're talking about. I never believe these guys. And now maybe I'm just a little too cynical for the average guy, but that cynicism is my business. Even your own mother will lie to you if she thinks she's protecting you.
To my knowledge, we've not had anybody come forward that was involved. I guess it's too much to ask. People say, hey, it took several hundred people at least, maybe more than that, to pull this thing off, 9/11, somebody would talk by now.
Now, when you think about that, it's not very rational, because the people involved, we're talking about murder, we're talking about treason, we're talking about the worst possible crimes that people in office could commit, and are any of them who were involved going to come forward? Are any of them who have been silent about it, if they were not directly involved and yet knew about it, so they were complicit for several years, are they now going to suddenly come forward?
Thanks very much, Dr. Griffin.
Okay, Jared, thank you for your attention to this story.
Physical evidence examined by scientists, architects, and engineers. And in upcoming shows, we will present this technical evidence. It's unchallenged, really, that the official story just does not hold water or truth. Dr. Griffin believes there is no doubt that the 9/11 incident was a false flag operation designed a pretext to attack rich Muslim nations. As we do this series, you'll see that President Bush and Vice President Richard Cheney have many questions to answer. Will they ever answer under oath? Remember last time they refused to be under oath, and they testified together, not separately. In our series, we're going to take every event, one event at a time, beginning on September 11, 2001. We're going to subject it to close scrutiny, ultimately with a view to revealing the lies and upholding the truth. I think before the series is over, you'll see that we can unequivocally present to you the fact that 9/11 indeed was an inside job. In the coming shows, we're going to talk about the misdirected truth seekers, the destruction of evidence, and much willified misrepresentation. Masterfully, presented originally, and we hope just as masterfully unmasking it. As in any crime, we'll have to examine the motive, the means, and the opportunity. Not only were the Twin Towers gone, but Building 7. Ah, what a mystery. This building was not attacked by an airplane. It was not attacked by anyone. But yet, it came down. Think about it. How could anyone penetrate the Earth's most protective and heavily defended airspace, the fortress of the Pentagon? Was the motive simply greed to incorporate power? We have spent millions of taxpayer dollars and squandered it really on investigations that have yielded no accountability, few answers, and fewer reforms. Yet, as we have pointed out already, 9/11 has been used as political and policy fodder. We are going to deal with this episode basically about the airplanes hitting the Trade Center in New York City. Did we see what we saw? In other words, seeing is believing. Everyone saw the two planes hit the towers, didn't they? Jim Mars, investigative reporter and consultant to the series, brings up an interesting thing. He talks about a scenario used by black operations back in 1962. It was known as the Northwoods Incident.
One of the scenarios in Operation Northwoods was to take a regularly scheduled commercial airliner and take a similar type plane, paint the tail numbers up to resemble that of the commercial airliner, fly it by remote control out over the Caribbean, and by remote control blow it up after sending a tape-recorded message saying, "Help, we're being attacked by Cuban MiGs." This was in 1962. I think we had a very sophisticated, more modern version of that plan happen on September the 11th, 2001.
We have two different planes and two different airlines involved in the World Trade Center crash. Let's take the second flight first, United Airlines Flight 175. It was a Boeing 767-222, scheduled to fly from Boston to Los Angeles. It had 56 passengers on board, two pilots, and seven flight attendants. At 8:14 a.m., Flight 175 took off from Boston's Logan Airport, 16 minutes after its scheduled departure time. In other words, it was late leaving. 30 minutes later, at 8:42, Flight 175 was off of its planned course, and it was flying south. At 8:46, someone turned off its transponder signal. At 8:57, Flight 175 started a descent. It descended from 28,000 feet, approaching the World Trade Center. Interestingly enough, if you trace the timeline back, there's not much radar information or any visual sightings on either one of these two flights that crashed into the World Trade Center. Both were missing for about 30 minutes of the flight from Boston to New York. Dave Von Kleist and William Lewis, in their documentary, The 9/11 Ripple Effect, discussed the airplane scenario, whether or not the airplanes that crashed into the Trade Towers were really American Flight 11 and United Flight 175, or could they have been substituted with some sort of military drone that looked like the jumbo airliners.
We have been able to obtain all of the recordings available by the FAA of air traffic on that day, September 11th, 2001. In a future interview, in a future show on this subject, we will present those air traffic recordings. I think you'll find them interesting. We'll lay it out as a narrative. It'll be part of our continuing series here on the Conspiracy Hour. Thanks for listening. Here we are, 11 years and a day later, and we still have no answers, no closure. I'm Jerry Pippin. This is the Conspiracy Hour. Thank you for listening. Until next time, cheers.